What's up, everybody? This is your Sleepers Podcast, and we'll also talk about some prospects on today's show. Adam, Scott, and Al here. Now, we are recording on Monday afternoon, but you are hearing this on Tuesday. So as of now, no big breaking news, nothing major. So we've got, you know, CJ Wilson update, Victor Martinez. But if anything happens on Monday night, we don't have it on today's podcast. Anyway, welcome, Sleepers. Now, guys, we did this about a month and a half to 2 months ago, but things have changed. So we'll either revisit some old names or talk about some new names. And how are you guys?
I'm good. I'm just getting in a groove here. Second podcast of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Podcasting Scott. Master.
Well,
how milk you are.
Scott's first of the day. And did you know that it's not just any Tuesday? It's Team Name Tuesday up in here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast.
All right.
Got some
My
good ones.
My favorite Tuesday.
I don't know if we had this one last year. Probably not. But I really like this one from Andrew in New Orleans. Cinder Garden Cop.
I love it.
It's outstanding.
It is great. Very good.
Off to a good start. Cinder Garden Cop. All right, I got a lot of things to tell people about. As of 4 o'clock Eastern time on Monday when we're recording, we've already got over 50 people in our bracket challenge. We want you to join, too. First of all, we want you to get the complete March Madness experience with CBS Sports Bracket Games. You can start a group or you can enter to play for prizes. So you can either do this on the app, get the CBS Sports app, or go to cbssports.com/brackets. Thursday is the deadline when the games start. But Scott White, you have to do a bracket. Everybody's in. All the podcasters are in. You out there, you sign up. You compete against us. Tell us which podcast you listen to if you want to put that in the name that you enter for your entry.
You're gonna make me do a bracket?
Yes, you have to do it, Scott.
And what happens if what does the winner get?
Nobody gets anything. It's just pride. Oh. We're just competing against the listeners.
Adam, do you have success with your brackets? Do you have a good track record?
Decent. I usually do pretty well.
I'm terrible. So listeners out there have one person that they will definitely beat.
No, I'm in a pool where the six top teams get a prize and the bottom two teams get a prize. I don't really understand how that works. Couldn't you just aim to be one of the bottom two? Wouldn't that be
yes,
fairly likely?
Yes, you succeed? Can. I would imagine that the whoever's running it would have to, you know, make sure there's some integrity involved. I never like giving prizes to people who come in last place. Get your money back, that kind of stuff. That was never my thing.
I'm just using my usual process, and it should work very well for finishing in the bottom.
Well, then you're going to win, yeah. In Scott's league anyway. All right. So how do you join the league? Well, I will do two things. I will give out the URL right now, and I have been tweeting it. So you can just check my Twitter timeline or whatever the heck it's called on Twitter at Adam Azer, AIZER, and you can join. I've got the URL and the password, and here it is. The URL is cbspodcast2016.mayhem, M-A-Y-H-E-M, .cbssports.com. cbspodcast2016.mayhem.cbssports.com. And the password is all lowercase letters, CBS Podcast, singular. All right, join us. Now, you want to join the podcast league? Well, I'm going to be looking for a week for some submissions, and next Monday or Tuesday, I will announce the winners, and you can put some fun story in there, whatever you want, a joke, whatever, you make it fun, or nothing at all. Because I'll try to, you know, make it pretty random, although humor won't hurt.
Pretty random?
Pretty random. Like, I want to make it mostly random, but if anybody puts in a lot of effort, I want to give them a little bit of weight. No guarantees, but a little bit of weight. So email us, and here's how you get in the podcast league. And pretty soon we'll start talking fantasy baseball. But here's how you get in the podcast league. The league is Monday night, 2 weeks from, well, today, but yesterday when you listen to this. The 28th of March, so Monday, March 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern. If you cannot make that time, please do not submit an entry. It has to be that time, Monday, March 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Just email the normal email address, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and put podcast league in the subject line, okay? That's all you got to do. Podcast league in the subject line, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Monday, March 28th, 8 p.m. Eastern. We hope to see you there. And now let's talk fantasy baseball. All right. So I just want to knock out the prospects that you think are fantasy relevant. We've done this a little bit before. Maybe throw in some new names like Peter O'Brien, who homered twice the other day. But Scott, you're a big prospects guy. You write a lot of prospects stuff. Who's getting drafted by Scott White? And then we'll ask Al.
Oh, in a standard mixed league, I mean, looking beyond Corey Seager and Steve Matz, of course, who still count as prospects, the guy I'm still looking the most at is Tyler Glasnow, just because not only is he spectacular, a lot of strikeout potential, could be unhittable at times. And then there's some clear openings in the Pirates' rotation. I don't expect Ryan Vogelsong to last or Jeff Locke, especially if they're looking to contend. So I think Glasnow will be in there soon. Some other guys to keep an eye on, though, in terms of upside and how likely, how soon they probably are to arrive. Jose Berrios, Twins pitcher prospect, not too far behind Glasnow. AJ Reed, Astros first baseman. I don't have a lot of hope for John Singleton. I expect him probably to get the job from the start, but that hasn't gone well in the past. I also like Orlando Arcia to take over as the Brewers shortstop at some point in the first half. And hey, this skill set kind of reminds me of Francisco Lindor. And maybe he can have as much success right away. So those are some guys who I could at least see drafting and stashing in a mixed league, even though I haven't been so motivated to do it myself. There are some others who should be on the radar in either NL or AL only leagues, even if they aren't quite as high end of prospects. And occasionally some of those guys surprise and end up entering the mixed league discussion as well. But for now, you mentioned Peter O'Brien. He's one of several who could end up playing left field for the Diamondbacks if Yasmani Tomas isn't ready to go at the start of the season. He's been dealing with a knee injury. I also like Brandon Drury in that mix, a guy who could end up playing a lot of second and third for the Diamondbacks as well. And he kind of reminds me of Jed Jerko and what he brings to the table.
Dodgers pitching update. Do we have anybody there?
Yeah. Last I saw, Brandon Beachy looks like the favorite for the fifth spot. I mentioned Jose De Leon as a possible candidate, and he's still a candidate. A lot of strikeout potential, a little more hittable than Glasnow, but still a lot of upside for De Leon. And I just think they're going to go with the veterans for now, especially since Hyunjin Ryu's timetable is unclear, and he could be back. So they could just have another dilemma with De Leon if they call him up too soon and Ryu comes back. So somebody to keep on your radar for sure, but I'm not that motivated to draft him right now. A guy like who I don't think has gotten any mention in any time we talked about prospects and who's now tied for the spring lead in home runs is Mac Williamson of the Giants, who seems to have a lot of power, opposite field power. Showed a good batting eye in the minors, too. I think he just has one walk this spring. But, you know, he's making an impression. He would have been in the contention for the left field job if they hadn't signed Denard Span, but Span has an injury history. Angel Pagan has an injury history. It seems like sooner or later there's going to be an opening in that outfield. And at 25, Mac Williamson, who's only been in the minors this long because he had Tommy John surgery in 2014, he seems like a guy who could end up surprising in fantasy this year.
Al?
Yeah, Scott's hit on most of the mixed league guys that I'm targeting as well, but there's a few others. And Scott mentioned AJ Reed and that first base situation in Houston. I've kind of gotten interested in Tyler White, no relation to Scott, as far as I know.
I hope not, because I didn't mention him.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know if this is really that bold of a prediction. I don't think Singleton will win the job because he's having a miserable spring so far and his competitors aren't. And White is interesting and intriguing to me because he's third base eligible. So not that I think that he's going to overtake Luis Valbuena, at least coming out of camp. I think he could maybe later in the year. And he has some chance of winning that first base job. And then you have somebody who might get regular bats who's third base eligible. So in some deeper leagues, especially, I've been targeting Tyler White. Scott mentioned Orlando Arcia. I've been targeting him, but also J.P. Crawford, who's in a similar situation where he has a pretty flimsy roadblock in front of him in Philadelphia. In fact, so not notable that I'm forgetting Freddie Galvis's name. He's one that I've actually drafted in a mixed league so far. And
jump in. Do either of you see, as we're talking shortstops, Trevor Story in Colorado or Trey Turner in Washington, you know, being up early or being up at the start of the year?
You know, Trevor Story is probably, it's a shame we hadn't mentioned it until now, because yeah, I expect him to be the Rockies shortstop on opening day. He's had a big spring, 3 home runs already. And he was a 2020 guy in the minors last year, so some speed there as well. I kind of imagine him, I don't know. I guess maybe having a similar base skill set to Semien, but obviously going to be in a much better hitter's park. So that could go well. Trey Turner, I'd bet against him, especially with Dusty Baker there. Seems like Danny Espinosa is probably going to be the shortstop. Now, I did see a report that Ryan Zimmerman is still dealing with the plantar fasciitis that cost him some time last year. He's been playing, but he's been playing a lot of DH. And Daniel Murphy, of course, is capable of playing first. So there's some thought that maybe Zimmerman could begin on the DL, Murphy at first, and that would get Trey Turner in the lineup. But I think that's a long shot.
Okay, guys, let's move on then. Injuries, news, and notes. Just a couple things to mention here. CJ Wilson having more shoulder issues, and Wilson likely to start the year on the DL for the Angels. So who's in the rotation? Look, their rotation is potentially in shambles. I mean, it's if they're relying on Weaver and Wilson, they're in trouble there. But are there other guys? And we talked about this on Monday's podcast, Matt Shoemaker potentially being an option there. But anyway, what does this Wilson injury do to the Angels' rotation?
I mean, it does open it up, and it gives somebody like Shoemaker a better shot. Tyler Skaggs, Nick Tropiano was somebody that I also mentioned on Monday's podcast. Right. So it takes a crowded situation where, you know, probably some deserving candidate wasn't going to get a spot. You know, now we're, you know, really looking at probably two spots where you've got Garrett Richards, I guess potentially three, because I think Richards and Andrew Heaney are probably the only real sure things there.
Yeah, because now Jared Weaver has a degenerative spinal issue, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And he was hitting 80 in his last spring start, and that's what he was topping out at. So I could see that becoming a DL stint.
And, well, who's the most interesting to you? Skaggs, Tropiano, CJ Wilson, or excuse me, Shoemaker?
I guess I'd have to say Shoemaker just because of what he did 2 years ago, though. He's getting pummeled this spring. A lot of home runs. It is spring, but home runs were an issue for him last year in the regular season, too. So that's discouraging. I do like the upside of Skaggs, but fresh off Tommy John surgery, I'm not expecting much from him. He wouldn't be the most surprising pitcher to have a sneaky good year, but I see him as AL-only material.
And we've got to keep an eye on Victor Martinez, who is actually a Scott White sleeper, but he hurt his left knee, and that has been a problem for Victor Martinez. Is there anything we know right now, or should we just wait and see?
Yeah, not anything more than that so far.
Okay. So we'll wait and see, and hopefully we'll have some more for you on Wednesday. Well,
I just want to back up real quick to the prospects, because one guy that you actually listed in our notes that we didn't mention is Keon Broxton.
Yes, thank you.
Who's now the front runner for the center field job in Milwaukee, and he's got some steals potential. So I haven't been targeting him yet, but I think certainly in upcoming deeper league drafts, now that he's got the edge on that competition, I could see drafting Broxton.
Victor Martinez, you said it was the knee bothering Martinez again?
Yeah.
Last report, it's actually the hamstring.
Oh, all right. Well, that's
mild hamstring strain.
Oh, okay, I hadn't even seen that yet.
So that, I guess, is good news, though. You know, a 36-year-old with a hamstring strain, that still sounds like a possible DL stint.
Yeah, well, that certainly lessens his sleeper appeal, but hopefully we'll know more on Wednesday. All right, so it's Team Name Tuesday here, and let's go through some fun ones, other than Syndergaard and Cop, which is our winner right now. Moti Raven on Twitter actually gave us two. The Mike Ehrman Trouts. That's tremendous. That's Breaking Bad, and that is tremendous. You have to have the avatar.
Oh, okay.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's
and,
good.
F-War, what is it good for? You put a little F before it.
It's been done.
All right, well.
It's been overdone.
Well, Mike Ehrman Trouts is great. From Tom Clemente, yes. We have Piscotty doesn't know.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good.
A little obvious, but it's all right.
Brandon Feingold says Piscotty too hotty.
It's you know, along the obvious lines again. I like what Al does with Piscotty and turns it into the little coffee.
Yeah, but I haven't come up with a good team name yet.
I know, but I like that. That's a less obvious route that I approve of.
Like beam me up, Piscotty.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm a tough. I'm not good at coming up with team
names.
Yeah,
you know, this is.
I treat my own with this same level of scrutiny.
This just reeks of hypocrisy over here. Very harsh judge. Okay. Zach B. McCullers with crayons.
It's okay. Yeah. I've thought about that.
Yeah.
I don't get this one. Wookiee of the year?
Who's Wookiee?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I like this one though. Latos intolerant.
That has been done many times.
Yeah.
Has it? Okay.
Yes. But it's good.
It's so good.
It's good. It's just, you know, been around 3 or 4 years.
So Gabe gave us one. Gabe Gomez. I'm going to shorten it because I think we can make it. I think you just go, Kenta Maeda man out of me.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential with Kenta Maeda.
Yeah, there is. That. We can explore the Maeda and like, Maeda man. Yeah, I don't know. Like it's good. There's something there. Mike has Waka Texas Ranger. I think we had that one before. Asespidus for the rest of us. We know that. Darno soup for you. And sail the seven sea shecks. I think she sells sea shecks might be funny. I think I had that one last year. She sells sea shecks.
I think you did.
Yeah.
By the seashore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's this edition of Team Name Tuesday, which gives us plenty of time for some sleepers for the 2016 season. Now the sleeper columns. What's going on with the sleeper columns? Are version 2.0 for you guys out?
Mine or not, mine may, it's kind of, lower in the queue for me because I'm working on some other things. So I'm not sure. And plus my lists haven't changed that much, to be honest. So
my list could stand to change more. I had more sleepers I wanted to get in than I could replace. So yeah, my 2.0s will be coming out probably this week. Some of them may spill into next week, but they're coming. Hold on. They're coming.
Well, I'm going to list some guys. I'll probably list all of them, but I won't talk about all of them because I want you all to go to the columns and read them on fantasynews.cbssports.com. And there's great video content on there too. So a lot to learn on cbssports.com at fantasynews.cbssports.com. But if we look at Al's sleepers, same list he gave me, right? Same list from January.
No, a few changes.
Well, we got Matt Moore in there. Chris Davis, is he new?
No, he was there before.
All right. Well, I'm going to read the names. You tell me.
You'll go through and then I'll tell you which ones are new when we get there.
Sure. Blake Swihart, Devin Travis, Corey Spangenberg, Yanhervis Solarte, Josh Harrison, Asdrubal Cabrera, Matt Kemp, Juck Peterson, Chris Davis, Justin Verlander, Kyle Hendricks, Matt Moore. What's new?
Josh Harrison is new.
All
and
right.
I had my little epiphany that I think I talked about last week where I realized that he's not that different in value from Matt Duffy and looked at where he was drafted and thought, okay, you can get good value on Josh Harrison. So he's new and Justin Verlander is new.
Oh,
I'm not
really?
Sure why he didn't make the list the first time because I've been pretty big on him since the end of last season. And hang on, because I know there's one more. Maybe it's
Chris Davis. Is he new?
No, maybe it's,
Hendricks.
I thought it was Hendricks. Maybe it is. Well, for sure we got, Harrison and Verlander.
Okay. Let's start with Josh Harrison. And he's eligible at second base, third base, and outfield, which means he's probably eligible at middle infield and corner infield. Although, aren't there players who are eligible at like second base but not middle infield?
No, there's the reverse.
Oh, the reverse. Right.
Yeah, if they get a combined 20 games at second and shortstop, they'll be middle infield eligible, even though it may be like 13 at second and 7 at shortstop.
And they won't be eligible at either of those two individual positions.
Yes.
But
it's controversial, but that's the way it is.
Well, Harrison is eligible at middle infield, corner infield, second base, third base, and outfield, which is very nice. And He's coming off a year that was much worse than 2014 when he batted 315 with 13 home runs, 18 steals. Last year it was 287 with 4 home runs and 10 steals in only 114 games. So Al, alright, so what kind of leagues are you drafting Josh Harrison in?
12 team mixed, probably not so much in head to head with the smaller rosters, although I think he'd be all right as a late or reserve round pick there, but definitely in roto, you know, because he can help you in the steals. I think he can help you with batting average as well. And certainly with the deeper rosters, I think he'd be somebody good that you could wait on for any of those positions. And of course, obviously either corner or middle infield.
And who would you guys rather have, Matt Duffy or Josh Harrison?
I do have Duffy ranked a little higher, but I think the value is likely to be much better for Harrison.
Scott?
They bring similar things to the table. I actually give Duffy a little more upside as a base stealer because he was a perfect 12 for 12, I think it was, last year, and even better base stealer than that in the minors. And I think Harrison, 2 years ago, he had 17. I'm totally just going off memory here.
18. So 18. Not bad.
18 2 years ago. That was the most he's had before.
Okay. I'll throw out some more names because he could be second base or third base. You're not going to play him in outfield most likely. But at third base, would you rather have Josh Harrison or David Wright?
I'd rather have Harrison.
Josh Harrison or Justin Turner?
I'd rather have Justin Turner.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, well, he's going even later, so we can add him to Sleepers 2.0 right there.
Yeah.
How about at second base, Josh Harrison or, just pulling up second base, Jonathan Scope?
I'm going to say Scope, and I'm not looking at my second base rankings, but the gut definitely says Scope and the massive power upside there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll keep it there. So we'll go to our next guy. Well, Justin Verlander, we have spoken enough about him, but Al, is he a top 25 pitcher for you, Justin Verlander?
Well, he is for me, but I don't think he is for anybody else. So he's the guy that when I need, I'd say probably more of a third starter. I've got him ranked as a second starter, but I can, you know, get, I mean, if I really want to wait, I can, you know, draft Verlander as my second starter, but more typically I've been bringing him in as my third starter and, you know, waiting far beyond where I actually have him ranked.
Well, I know Heath is concerned about him, and I think the three of us on this podcast were more optimistic on him because it seems pretty clear that once he got healthy, Verlander was pretty damn good last year. What are your concerns, Scott, about Justin Verlander, and just how concerned are you?
Well, my concerns are that going into each of the last two seasons, I said he's going to bounce back this year, and I thought I had good reasons to believe that, so it's... Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times.
Shame on fantasy owners.
Really shame on me. Yes. Yeah, something like that. So,
shame on our podcast.
Now, 14 start stretch like he had in last year was the most encouraging yet. So I have him 29th, not far outside of the top 25. But I'm a little more reserved in my enthusiasm than Al is because he just kept doing this, pulling this fake out trick.
Well, I don't know why I said top 25. Usually we say top 24 because we deal in multiples of 12 in fantasy, and at least in CBS sports leagues. So I'm going to get off that top 25 thing, and everything is going to be multiples of 12 from now on. Let's do another sleeper for Al Melchior. All right. All right. Well, I do want to talk about Chris Davis with a K. And, you know, maybe the Oakland thing, maybe too big of a deal was made out of that because almost all of his home runs would have left O.co, the ones he hit in Milwaukee last year. Davis is 28 years old. He did finish strong with a 934 OPS in his last 53 games, but he has shown some streakiness. So what makes you say that Chris Davis with a K is a sleeper this year, Al?
Well, you know, partly what you addressed, that I don't think that the park factor issue is going to be a factor for Chris Davis. But I think that there is enough concern about the inconsistency, which I don't want to, you know, completely downplay because, I mean, he has been wildly inconsistent. But the power upside that he's shown during those stretches, and they're long stretches, I think merits a higher pick than what he's getting. And I'm looking at Fantasy Pros right now. He's the 49th ADP ranked outfielder there. And that's a composite, of a few different sites. So, I think he's much better than a high end number five outfielder.
I would, well, I don't know. That'd probably be about what I ranked him. And I actually am adding Chris Davis to my busts list because I feel like there hasn't been a strong enough reaction to the move to Oakland. And because I didn't really like him before going to Oakland, I feel like a lot of his value is built on an unsustainable streak at the end of last season where he hit like 20 home runs in a 56-game span. And as you mentioned, I clearly a track record of streakiness, so I'm not buying into that at all. On average, he is actually going in the 15th round on average in roto leagues and the 12th round on average in head-to-head leagues. And I wouldn't even draft him in a points league with the inconsistency and the strikeouts. It's just I just think it's they're making too much of the power surge at the end of last season.
Would you rather have
in a points league, yeah, where you're drafting three outfielders in the utility, so maybe let's say, there's 40 some odd outfielders that are coming off the board. And that's not his format.
Yeah,
he's going to be fringy in that format. But Roto, I think he's better.
For what it's worth, because I'm imagine this might get super confusing. My updated sleepers, breakouts, and bust list are the biggest difference, other than just my mind changing over the course of time, is that there's ADP data to work with now, so I actually see where these players that I've said will be good value or bad value are going. And so that's caused me to sing a different tune on some players. Okay. And we had been citing Fantasy Pros a lot, but now there's been enough data in our own drafts and in our own drafts on our own site that, that's the ADP data I'm looking at because, hey, I write for CBSSports.com.
So. All right. Well, let's do a Scott White sleeper then. So what did you notice with ADP trends that gave you a new sleeper?
This was partially just something I sensed in our own drafts too. And Carlos Santana as a sleeper who's going in the 18th round on average in Roto, 13th round in head to head. And I think I got him in the 11th round in our head to head points mock and was thrilled to get him there. And the stat that jumps out to me for Carlos Santana, all right, one of the worst seasons of his career last year, hit only 19 home runs, batting average in the low 231 actually. So we've seen him hit 8 more home runs. So just 2 years ago, he had 8 more home runs than he had last year. If you look at how many head-to-head points he scored last year, he was only 10.5 behind Adrian Gonzalez, who most every league is drafting in the first 5 rounds. So that's the difference between 2 home runs for Carlos Santana. So he doesn't even need a full bounce back to overtake Adrian Gonzalez and enter that must-start discussion at first base in a points league.
Well, yeah, okay, let me... You made a great point, and if I'm in a points league and I'm weak at first base, I will wait for Carlos Santana, except in the podcast league, because I won't be able to, because everybody here will have heard me say that, and they will take Carlos Santana, somebody will, before I can. That makes sense. In a roto league, what
in
do you
a roto
think
league, I still think 18th round is pretty good value. He's kind of a safer and, I guess, higher run scoring potential version of like a Mark Trumbo or Pedro Alvarez. He's going to hurt you in batting average, but he's, and obviously nothing in the way of steals, but the other three categories he could be an asset in just because he walks so much, gets on base at a high rate. I would have liked him more for runs if Terry Francona had followed through on his suggestion to bat him leadoff, but it sounds like that's not going to happen. He'll be more of a middle of the lineup guy. He could still score an okay number of runs, though.
I'll tell you what, Scott, you got some very interesting pitchers on your sleepers list. And Gio Gonzalez, Raisel Iglesias, Rich Hill, Vincent Velasquez, Jay Happ, and obviously you value them differently, but it's really about where they're being drafted. And Gio Gonzalez, and Al, I'll let you weigh in on Gio because I feel like you were anti-Gio last year, And I was pro Gio, and then I was like, I'm kind of done with Gio Gonzalez, and you sort of convinced me, and I understand that there's some underlying stats there that could help, but I just don't know how good of a pitcher he is anymore. I don't really trust him to pitch deep into games, but let me get Al's opinion on Gio Gonzalez, who's going the 17th round, and what is it, 17th in points and 13th in roto, Scott? For Gio?
It's roto first.
Okay, so 17th in roto and 13th in points leagues for Gio Gonzalez. Al, how do you feel about him? You were a little over him last year.
Yeah, no, I was. I feel like I've been anti-Gio for quite a while, but those rounds, they seem appropriate. So I don't think that, he's so bad in the ways that, you mentioned in terms of not being efficient that and not having good control that he shouldn't be drafted in 12-team mixed leagues. So that's where he should be drafted.
Yeah, I didn't like his efficiency when he was drafted like a top 20 starting pitcher because the efficiency issues, they're similar to what Heath and I have gone back and forth about over Tyson Ross, and I don't like his efficiency issues. Just too many walks that, along with the high strikeout rate, makes him pretty much a certainty, or at least makes it hard for him to go have a 200 inning season to go seven innings at a time, etc. And I do think Gio Gonzalez has the same issue, but if Tyson Ross was going as late as Gio Gonzalez was, I'd like Tyson Ross a lot too. Now, Tyson Ross was clearly better than Gio last year, but it was mostly the whip that killed Gio Gonzalez. And what killed his whip wasn't walks. His walk rate was the same as always. His strikeout rate was the same as always. It's still a ground ball pitcher like usual. The basics profile for Gio Gonzalez didn't change. He just gave up a lot more hits. Actually had the highest BABIP of any starting pitcher. So you look at his FIP, fielding independent pitching, which is supposed to estimate what ERA would be by what a pitcher himself controls. And it wasn't Gio Gonzalez's worst year. It was actually one of his better years with the Nationals by that measurement. So I think it was just a lot of bad luck. Some bad defense probably contributed to that. But I think to be that out of whack with the rest of the league and the rest of his history, luck was a big part of the equation. And that turns around. You're getting Francisco Liriano, I think, for 6 to 8 rounds later than the actual one will go.
It's just so weird with Gio Gonzalez because if you look at his last 3 years, well, 4 years ago, his first year with the Nationals, his ERA was 289. And since then, it's been up every year to 336, to 357, to 379. And it's just rare to see a guy with a 357 ERA and a 379 ERA in his last 2 years giving up a combined 18 home runs. I mean, that's amazing. 3 of his 4 years with Washington, 10 home runs or less. And now, I mean, look, in 2 of those years, he pitched less than 180 innings. But still, I mean, it's incredible. He keeps the ball in the park. How is he not better? But it's really 3 years in a row with a rising ERA. So, I mean, still, over this 3 years, how is he not doing better? It just seems like FIP can't possibly explain everything.
We didn't mind the ERA so much, though, when the whip was okay. You know, last year he had a 143 whip or whatever it was. It was awful. We could live with the mid-threes ERA with everything else he brought to the table. So I don't need him to get back to a 280 ERA to justify this pick.
Okay. I'll leave it at this. Michael Pineda or Gio Gonzalez?
I'm not big on Pineda this year, but I will go Pineda there.
I will, too. You're kind of... Those guys aren't really in the same territory,
Let's
I don't think.
Let's drop it down. Let's drop it down. Anthony DeSclafani or Gio Gonzalez?
Al's the high guy on DeSclafani.
I'm the high guy on DeSclafani. I'm still going Gio.
Me too.
Okay. Scott, let's do another sleeper and stay with the pitchers. And Vince Velasquez, are you only considering him a sleeper? By the way, he's 28th round in roto, 23rd round in head-to-head points. Only a sleeper in RP, in SPARP formats, but you can use him as a relief pitcher or a sleeper in general. Vince Velasquez.
Sleeper in general, especially the SPARP leagues, because that is a big deal. And I think he might be the best relief pitcher eligible starting pitcher this year, provided the Phillies give him enough innings. And obviously he has a rotation spot to begin the season. It's not guaranteed, but he's supposed to be the favorite and he hasn't done anything to hurt his chances this spring. A lot of strikeout potential for Vincent Velasquez, which is why I say sleeper in general. Probably more of a bench option in a roto league just because you're not going to get deep enough into the starting pitcher pool to make a starter out of him. But I could absolutely see him becoming a starter for you before season's end. He never had in a minor league season fewer than 10.1 strikeouts per nine innings. And that pretty much tells the story right there.
All right, let's go to Raisel Iglesias. I want both of you to weigh in on this one, on Raisel Iglesias, who's going in the 14th round. Now, I'm looking at Fantasy Pros ADP. I am not looking at CBSSports.com ADP. But when we talked about Iglesias, we had said he had actually left the sleeper list because he was going so high. And on Fantasy Pros, he's going before almost all of those second-year pitchers, right before McCullers. Ahead of Quintana, Pineda, Iwakuma, Shelby Miller, McHugh, Smiley, Taiwan Walker, Severino, Rodon. He's going ahead of all those guys. Is it different on CBS Sports? Can we still call Raisel Iglesias a sleeper?
Yes, I'd fully planned to remove him based on what we were seeing on Fantasy Pros, but like I said, I write for CBSSports.com, sure. So I feel like that's the draft data I need to pay the most attention to and to write around.
Good for you, company man.
Yeah, well, look, I would assume most of the people reading this content play on CBSSports.com, just trying to give them the most accurate representation. And yeah, 14th round is good value for a pitcher with his potential. Could you divide where he's going by 12 to see what the round comparison is about?
I've already done that. So on Fantasy Pros, it's 14th, but
No.
Pitchers in general go later?
Or I'm sorry, no, 13th. It's 14th on CBS, right?
Yeah.
So I flipped it.
It's 13th. The very, very beginning of the 13th, almost the 12th.
Right. And nine spots higher. 38th there on Fantasy Pros, 47th.
Among starting pitchers. Okay. Yeah. I like 47th more.
But yeah.
I guess starting pitchers as a whole are going later on Fantasy Pros.
Well, this brings up a good point. CBS, if you look in our draft rooms, our projections are done by sportsline.com, which, by the way, you should check out. And there are going to be some players that Sportsline is higher on than Al Scott and Heath, and there are going to be some players that Sportsline is lower on than the three analysts. And I think one example of a guy who's lower and is a sleeper, I think specifically in CBS Sports Leagues, is Danny Salazar. I find him to be pretty far down the starting pitcher rankings when I sort. I don't know if you guys have noticed the same thing, but that's why I keep ending up with Danny Salazar. So keep an eye on him in your draft room. But maybe the projections just aren't as good for Raisel Iglesias. I have no idea. But that could be contributing to him having a lower ADP in our leagues than like the aggregate on Fantasy Pros. However, that doesn't mean Sportsline is wrong. There are, I remember Charles Johnson. Dave and Jamie were so much higher, and I think Heath as well, so much higher on Charles Johnson than the Sportsline model in fantasy football, and he was a total dud, and Sportsline got that right. Doesn't mean that it's right. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and I think that does have some impact on the discrepancies maybe with our site and other sites in terms of ADP. Just because these guys show up higher or lower in the draft room based on the projection. I think maybe Chris Davis with a K is another example. Sportsline's very high on him. I'm not, so I'm going to call him a bust. But that has some impact on the average draft position. Now, it doesn't completely explain it because there are some players who are drafted completely differently than they appear in the draft room because of name recognition or hype or just differences of opinion, I guess. But it would be naive to say that where a player shows up in the draft room doesn't affect his ADP at all.
All right, guys, spin me a tale of Jay Happ. Not J.A. Happ, by the way, pronounced Jay Happ. Tell me why he's going to be good now. You've come around, you've drank the wine here, the Jay Happ wine, Al Melchior.
Were you making a pun there? When
yes, because it's some stupid crap about his spin rate or whatever, right?
That's quite amazing that you did that.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a two-part thing because we were just talking about this before the podcast and Scott was saying, because I said, well, what was the specific change that happened when he came to Pittsburgh? Because I remember there were some things that they worked on with him. Of course, Ray Searidge vaunted pitching guru. And Scott, you were saying that they noticed the same sorts of problems with him as with
Yeah, according to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, it was a similar problem that Francisco Liriano and, oh, I'm not sure I have it open anymore. I have so many windows open. Ah, yes, here it is. Same problem Francisco Liriano and Enson Volquez had, which was, it was in kind of too much of a hurry to release the ball, and so it changed his arm angle, lowered it, which compromised his control, compromised his velocity to a small degree, and just made it so he didn't hide the ball as well either. So it was kind of a trifecta of trouble. So, you know, Sirig points that out to him. He raises his arm angle. The strikeout rate goes way up. The effectiveness goes up. The velocity goes up a tick. And also looks like he worked on his arsenal a little, because he threw his fastball more often, probably because it was more effective after joining the Pirates. So this seems like Ray Sirig magic. And since the narrative seems to back up the numbers, that makes me buy into the narrative and the track record for Sirig. And really my biggest concern from Hap would be, now that he's going back to Toronto and is no longer under Sirig's watchful eye, will he regress to what he was doing before?
Yes.
But,
yeah, hashtag AJ Burnett.
Well, hashtag Edinson Volquez.
He's not that good, though.
Well.
You don't even want to draft Edinson Volquez.
He's a lot better than he was before joining the Pirates, and he's still basically the pitcher he was with the Pirates.
Well, Volquez pitches in Kansas City, and I don't know. The good thing about Hap is that, like, he did have a huge year in 2009. I've been excited about him since 2009 until recently. You know, but he'd been so bad before going to Pittsburgh.
But to bring it full circle, so there were the things that Sirig worked on with Hap, and then you saw the results, including the strikeout rate, but yet not a really big, uptick in velocity, but yeah, it's the spin rate. I mean, there's not that many pitchers that throw a fastball with an average spin rate above, say, 2,300 RPMs. Well, before he came to Pittsburgh, his average spin rate was 2,163. In Pittsburgh, it was 2,364. So it's a big increase and puts him on a plane that not many pitchers are at.
And honest question.
Again, yeah, maybe now that he's separated from Sirig and the staff in Pittsburgh, you know, maybe that won't continue, but that's pretty impressive.
Okay, honest question. How is spin rate calculated? Do you know?
I don't know. It's a pitch FX thing.
It seems, I don't know. It seems like a pretty hard thing to calculate.
Well, you would
accurately
think it'd be, you know, when they probably first started, you know, measuring velocity with radar guns, you know, that was, I mean, we're used to that.
All right, I'm not going to be
trusting
skeptical.
The technology.
I'll trust it.
But spin rate correlates very well with strikeouts.
Well, look, you know, Al, on Monday's podcast, we talked about how after you get past like the top 70 or 80 pitchers, it's ugly. I don't know where Hap is going, but is he a guy that he should be drafted at the end of, you know, any draft, any mixed league draft that's not
He's been one
shallow?
Of my favorite last round pitchers after Rich Hill's gone. It's kind of like they're my 1A, 1B when I'm in round 20, whatever. Jay Hap is right in that discussion now. 27th round in average on Roto, and 22nd round on average in head to head.
I think we've sniped each other on, I know you've sniped me on Hap.
Yes.
So.
Yes, I was. He's been a priority in AL only leagues for me for sure, because that starting pitcher crop is thinner than the NL.
All right, you guys have fun. I just actually, you make very good points, and I will say definitely on my radar when before he wasn't. And last guy, Jonathan Scope. You both like Jonathan Scope. He's going in the 19th round in both Roto and points leagues. Second baseman for the O's, Jonathan Scope.
Just so much power for a middle infielder. He would have, I think he was on pace for like, and I can't remember what standard I used, if it was 600 plate appearances or 162 games or what, but if he hadn't missed that time with injury, he would have hit 29 home runs. So basically 30. And I don't think we've had a 30 home run second baseman since Robinson Cano's last year of hitting 30, which I think was like 2012. Going off memory here, I know I'm not giving you exact numbers, which
you've been right in the ballpark with like all your off the top of your head suggested. Yes. Probably
yes.
Close.
Robinson Cano's last 30 homer season was 2012, and that was the last 30 homer second baseman we have. And Scope was on pace to do it last year. Not the well-rounded hitter Cano is. And I'm not that excited about drafting him in a points league where you only need one second baseman. There's no middle infield spot to fill. Poor plate discipline, so that's going to hold him back in that format. But in Roto, getting that much power from a middle infield spot, especially in the last round or two, could be what sets you apart.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was just saying I read something interesting about Scope. He's been swinging the bat faster now. They measured his bat speed, and it's like he went up about 300 or 400 RPMs on his bat speed over the last year.
How did they
calculate
that? That's
impressive, yeah, because I didn't even realize bats rotated.
No, I have no idea.
You're just making it.
What were you going to say, Al? What was the real thing?
I was going to nerd out from a different site. Those PitchFX data, by the way, were from TexasLeaguers.com. But it's been a while since I've given a shout-out to Baseball Heat Maps.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got that cool leaderboard of average average fly ball distance.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the top eight from last year. Giancarlo Stanton, which on the site they still call him Michael Stanton.
Yeah, I know. That's weird.
Second is Chris Davis. Third is Pedro Alvarez. Fourth is Paul Goldschmidt. Fifth is Kyle Schwarber. Sixth, Jose Abreu. Seventh, Nelson Cruz. Makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eighth is Jonathan Scope.
Three Orioles.
That's right.
Yeah, Pedro Alvarez now. And Chris Davis and Jonathan Scope.
They got the power.
So, that concludes our discussion on sleepers. For more, go to fantasynews.cbssports.com. And for more moreness, go to cbssports.com/brackets and sign up right now for our bracket games. Or you can do it on the app, the CBS Sports app. I love the brackets. I'm already in five leagues. But you can join our listeners league for all the podcasters. Look, no prize or anything, but, you know, just have fun with us and play some March Madness bracket challenge stuff on CBS Sports. You know how it works. Go to cbssports.com/brackets and sign up right now.
Can I say a couple things since you're concluding our sleepers discussion?
I hope it's about March Madness, but
it's not.
Yeah,
it's not at all.
It's about spin rates.
It's not about spin rates. It's about this sort of concludes our sleeper discussion because we also have a breakouts podcast, I presume.
Yes, sir.
Where you're also going to you're also going to hear about players expected to outperform their draft position for the most part. So, at least speaking for my list, there are even more exciting names than that than the sleepers list where, you know, I might have focused a little more toward the later stages of the draft than maybe the middle stages. So just something to keep in mind. There's more where that came from.
Gotcha.
And obviously more on the website too, as you mentioned.
Well, if the first 45 minutes weren't nerdy enough, let's read this email from Shane in Yonkers. Can one of the nerds please explain which they prefer when evaluating pitchers, FIP or XFIP, and why? FIP or XFIP?
Generally, I like XFIP because it doesn't make assumptions about the home run rate, so it goes right to the fly ball rate. It sort of accounts for the flukiness that can occur with the home run rate. But that said, I look at it in context with the pitcher. So if I'm looking at a pitcher who has a long history of being very susceptible or unsusceptible to home runs, I might trust the FIP. So I like to kind of look at, you know, ERA, FIP, and XFIP all in a row and look at the whole profile. But if you're going to make me pick one, I'm picking XFIP.
I'm probably picking FIP because I feel like I can check the work a little easier with FIP. I'm always a little skeptical of stats that I couldn't calculate myself, you know? And I think XFIP definitely falls in that category. But I don't really like either as like the assessment for pitchers. I like to look at all the numbers that go into these composite stats and kind of make a determination based on that. I do kind of use FIP as shorthanded context. Like it's easier to say this pitcher placed here in FIP than he placed here in strikeouts per nine, here in walks per nine, and here in home runs per nine. You know, if you're just trying to to make it, to simplify the point. And I do like the theory behind FIP that those three ratios I just mentioned are what most determines the outcome for a pitcher. But at the same time, it can be a little misleading because of park factors and the like.
Can we make a number? Can we like figure out some mathematical formula? What is pitching WAR? Does that include wins?
Pitching WAR does not include wins, no.
Oh, well then they pretty much already have the number, don't they? Pitching WAR, that would be like the composite of all the stats?
I guess, but it's another stat I can't calculate on my own. So.
Well, yeah, but that's,
I mean, that's probably the closest thing we have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we never ever mention that, and we never will. So let's go to our next email. You know, actually, I'm going to combine like two or three emails that we've gotten in the last couple of days. I see one from Brian. I see one from Doug. And it's about pitchers who are on innings limits or pitch count limits. Guys like Stroman, maybe Carlos Martinez, Lance McCullough, not necessarily Jose Fernandez, but pitchers that you expect to maybe go in the, you know, 180 inning range instead of 200, Drew Smyly, if he is involved in this, I don't know. You tell me if there are any pitchers that you've downgraded or if you just don't really care, but who you consider innings risks, or I don't know, you know what I'm saying. Go.
Well, I don't think this is exactly what you're asking, but that's kind of one of the biggest things that distinguishes that top group of pitchers we keep referring to, whether you're the top 17 or top 20 or 22, whatever you want to call it, from everyone else, is these guys I trust to go 200 to 220 innings, and these other guys I don't expect to. And that would include, that would be why I'm less bullish this year than in years past on some of those high upside middle rounders like McCullers or Luis Severino or even Yordano Ventura, who I have on my breakouts list, because if they don't get the innings that those 20 or so pitchers are expected to get, they're really not going to measure up to them, even if their ratios are just as hot, as just as you know, dominant. So they're, I think, limited to being lesser tier pitchers because of the innings. And look, I'm not saying they'll all throw just 180 innings. Eventually, they're, every pitcher who reaches that point takes the step to get to that point. But it's just hard to predict that for any of them.
So I look at this list and I see Shelby Miller, Colin McHugh, Jose Quintana as three veteran pitchers, and Iwakuma's there as well. I know he's had injury problems. Four veteran pitchers amongst these youngsters. Do you think those four, again, Quintana, Iwakuma, Shelby Miller, Colin McHugh, at least, maybe if you're not going to project them for 200 innings, can we at least say that they don't have any limits, that as long as they stay healthy, they could be 200 inning guys?
Yeah, I think that's fair for all of them.
Now, last question about this. Those guys who are going to be around 175, 180 innings, are they better in points or roto, or does it not matter?
They're better in, I don't know that you could say they're better in either format.
I mean, I think they're more penalized in a points league.
Yes, that's okay. The better way to put it.
There we go.
Innings are points in and of themselves. So,
okay, next email.
Somebody like James Shields has been so much more valuable in points than Roto over the years.
Okay, next email is from Jim. He says, "Dear Joe, Lucas, and Rex." Now, you guys are going to get that. I thought maybe Heath might have gotten that. That is Empire Records. Joe, Lucas, and Rex. "I'm thinking about trying the relievers-only approach in my 10-team NL-only Roto auction. The league has a minimum innings pitched rule of 900, and we start 9 pitchers. I figured I could draft 3 or 4 starting pitchers and the rest as relievers. I'm already keeping Melanson and Ramos. Do I need to draft an ace with this strategy, or can I go with the staff of Joe Ross, Andrew Kashner, Kazmir, those types of guys at $5 each?"
I would think you need an ace to try to, because I don't like the idea of punting a category. So I think you got to give yourself the best chance of getting wins and getting all those innings to help you with Ks, and also then get, you know, the best pitcher that you can, so that when you're getting all those innings that you're not hurting your ratios too much.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of punting categories either, but maybe he's already resigned to that, and getting the starting pitchers is just to meet that innings minimum. I mean, if it's a 10-team league, I was thinking, and we usually play in a 12-team AL-only roto league, I was thinking that having more than four starting pitchers isn't so uncommon in that 12-team format, but in a 10-team format, it probably is. And even if you get an ace or two, it's going to be hard to compete with the owners who have six starting pitchers in the strikeout and wins. So I don't like the strategy, but I think if you're going to follow through on it, you don't need to have an ace. I think you just want to make sure you get low pitchers who you can expect to have a low whip, or at least have some hope of having a low whip, like a Rich Hill or
NL only though.
Oh, NL only. So who's a whip specialist in an NL league?
Yeah, nobody's coming to mind. they're out there, but I just
they're know. Out there. I don't know, maybe somebody like Toronto a John Lackey, or I mean, he's not really a whip specialist, but he's not going to be expensive, and he's going to give you innings.
Do you want to hear my cheaply. National League? Well, no, mixed league sleeper, Jonathan Nease. Booyah!
Nah.
Yep.
Well,
he's the next
you believe
one.
In the power of Searage.
He's the next one.
he could be, but then again, Vance Worley wasn't. So it's not like it's an unblemished track record.
I always thought Nease was better than you guys thought he was. I remember having this argument with you. I don't think he's junk. I think he's a solid pitcher.
I thought like 3 years ago, he was pretty good.
I mean, he's more solid for a major league rotation than a fantasy rotation, but we'll see. All right, Zach in Rochester, New York. For those of us lucky enough to have Kyle Schwarber in keeper leagues, but who are worried about the potential of strikeouts and platoons hurting Schwarber's playing time, is this a good time to trade him? Or try to take advantage of his hype and name value? And if so, what is Schwarber's value?
Well, first of all, yeah, I do think it's a good idea. And it's not that I would be desperate to trade him. I would see if really the hype is such that you're going to get, say like third round value for him. Because I think that, you know, maybe that's something you could do. So to get, I'm trying to think like Charlie Blackman, maybe somebody of that caliber.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah, just caution, since we don't know the keeper rules, if it's a situation where you have Schwarber as an especially cheap keeper, then I don't think, I mean, unless you can get another really good cheap keeper, I don't think it's worth trading for like a Charlie Blackman type who's probably not so cheap at this point. But so you got to know your keeper rules. Just as a general rule, though, I agree. This may be the high point of Schwarber's value it may be, just period.
Well, wait. Do you anticipate Schwarber having catcher eligibility in 2017?
Right now I do, because there is some talk that, except maybe when John Lester's pitching and David Ross is catching, that Schwarber would be the backup catcher to Miguel Montero, which may be a way he ends up actually getting more at bats. But it's definitely a possibility that in the not too distant future, he's just no longer catcher eligible, which would obviously hurt his value in a major way, unless he makes some big strides as a hitter, which is certainly possible. I was not nearly as impressed as some people were by what I saw last year. And actually on Busts 2.0, Schwarber's going to be in that one.
Oh, yes, good. Because I really look forward to having this argument with you. I really do.
Okay.
I'm excited. I was going to do it right now, but now that I know it's in Busts 2.0, I will wait.
You can hold off on that. Yes.
Last email is from Harry. And Harry says, "Dear Pam, Lana, and Sterling." And this is Archer. And now I'm going to say I'm disappointed in Archer. I saw a clip of like the funniest moments at Archer and I laughed my butt off and I thought it was so funny. And then I started watching the show and really I did as like a whole half hour episode. It's not that good. So it's not bad. It's just, it was a letdown. Anyway.
Sorry to hear that.
The question is, I find myself drafting either Machado or Arenado in almost every draft. And I personally like Arenado better. However, if Machado will gain shortstop eligibility, especially early in the year, his stock greatly increases. Thoughts on if and when this might happen for Manny Machado?
It's I think, pretty much impossible to guess when. It happened very late last year. I wouldn't count on it. And, I mean, maybe it's something that's a difference maker, because for me, and I think for a lot of people, they're ranked very close together. I do like Arenado better, even with the possibility of shortstop eligibility for Machado. And I've had several people ask me, well, how far would you bump him up in your rankings if you played in a league where he was already shortstop eligible? And I wouldn't take Machado any higher than eighth if that were the case, and I'd still take him behind Correa.
Well,
really?
I'm going to disagree with you on that last point. He would be my fourth overall player if he was shortstop eligible. And I actually do have a slight preference for him over Arenado. It's pretty close, but Machado's a base stealer and Arenado isn't. He walks and Arenado doesn't. And that really is what makes the difference for me. Though, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with somebody taking Arenado over him. Shortstop eligibility is a game changer, though, because I think Machado is much safer to continue his current pace than Correa is, which doesn't translate to I'm not expecting to Correa to sustain his pace. I just think there's a chance he may not.
Well, fellas, loved it. Good stuff with the sleepers. Thank you very much. On Wednesday, oh, everybody, get in the group. By Wednesday, I want at least 200 people in our bracket challenge. Bring it on. I will beat you all. Al won't. Scott probably won't either, but I will beat you all.
I'm aiming for the bottom.
There you go. Scott and Al, good stuff. Thank you again. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday with some breakouts on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast.